it's Sunday morning on the floor, and while we intended to do a lot of recording throughout the weekend, we just haven't. We spent all of our time running around and talking to people. We have spent money, but we haven't done as much shopping as just socializing, which is 100% my aesthetic. At the same time, this show is huge. So while I've talked to everybody, I haven't even made it to the other side of the floor in 2 days. It's just been a back and forth. Also with A, I've been running to the room a lot. A is having a blast. Everyone I've talked to is up past 2, 3, 4 a.m. in the morning, drinking and talking and having a blast. Almost everybody I've talked to has found like crazy rare items. I have a couple really exciting pieces. Joel have gotten some crazy stuff. This episode's going to be a long one. I would love to put out episodes of this length more often, but I'm not quite that fast at editing just yet. Also, this episode is in two parts. The first part was Joel, A, and I sitting down in our hotel room Sunday after the show. The next part is Joel and I as we kind of give a deeper look into JoeFest as a whole, day by day, and some highlights. Hope you enjoy. Thanks for being a part of the Order of Battle.
My first highlight was not only getting to see the Joe Declassified booth again with the stuff they brought this time, because it's a round robin of stuff, but finally being able to sit in and listen to a Joe Declassified panel. You know, everybody says this, and I'll just end my highlight with this, is if you ever have the opportunity, carve out the time, because you'll get to see things and hear things that you don't ever get to hear or see from the vast history of G.I. Joe.
We met a bunch of people, and one had a pre-production cutter two-up, and I got to hold it. If you don't know what a two-up is, it's a 3¾ figure, but instead of being 3¾, it's twice the size of a 3¾ figure. They're made to, like, get in the details in the paint and stuff. And they're one of a kind. It actually ended up in the D-Class panel.
For me, one of the highlights of the event was simply having A with me. Done JoeCon and JoeFest, and I've taken him to other smaller events, but not this one. Buddy, having you with me here, you getting to experience all 3 days and load in, and all the vendors that you already know from smaller shows, and all of our Joe friends that you've known since you were 5 or 6, at this level is kind of fun. And whether or not I should have, I let you stay out past midnight every night.
That was awesome.
That was awesome, I agree. Ultimately, I can tell you a lot of really fun moments of this, and we will, but the one thing that meant the most to me was that you were with me this weekend. And I'm excited that next year's JoeFest, I won't have any concerns or qualms with bringing you back.
That would be awesome. This was fun.
So this year, I got to spend some more face time with Elite Cobra 2000. And this year, he also brought us these customized mugs that have our logo, have the JoeFest logo, and then they're individualized to myself, A, and Jason. He is just a guy that I really like to hang out with and chat with. And we've got to have some serious lobby time and just BS about all sorts of stuff, you know, just life in general. And that's really the part that most of us look forward to all day anyways, is ironically the show floor closing so we can just go hang out.
And also Don's wife was around and she was incredible to talk to as well.
At the swap meet on Saturday, we brought a big bin of toys and stuff down to the lobby. I set the stuff up. He had two extra missiles for the Wolverine, so I put those with him. And I've been thinking, I never said it because it's not true. Like, Joe Fest exclusive! Wolverine missile pack comes with two extra missiles! I sort of sold. I kind of convinced one of our other friends, Shannon. Well, he convinced himself, and I kind of helped get a the Phantom X-19 and a almost complete whale. James is super nice. There was a boy who came to the booth with just a box of stuff. When he went back to his room, he had the battle platform, the Wolverine, and some other stuff. James is really nice.
We've talked a bunch about Rhino. We mention him at the end of every episode. He's taking care of us, putting together our amazing graffiti logo. He put together our Order of Battle Night Force and a few other things, including our G.I. Alexander logo, which we now have stickers for. And as a special sort of thank you to a lot of people that have helped A out, we made G.I. Alexander shirts and A handed them out to a handful of people. Rust was able to join us in Augusta, so meeting him and his buddy Andrew has been incredible. Never met Rust before, and I'm really thankful for just his friendship and his kindness, but also like being a part of the Order of Battle.
I managed to score maybe one of the only things I actually named in our previous episode talking about what we were looking for, and there was a lot of anticipation for me. I was able to grab Series 2 from Animal Warriors of the Kingdom, the deluxe figures. Spiro Toys did not make it on Friday. So I was tearing up the sales floor trying to find the booth because I really enjoy being able to buy these independent toy lines directly from the creators. But Saturday morning he arrived, and it's a great feeling when you only see photos of items. But then when you see them in real life, it hits just as hard as the image. I picked up the whole wave times two. I cannot wait to pair these up with the hordes I've built, you know, already waiting at my house for the big bruisers. There's just something so special about meeting the creators of a product, seeing their excitement about their own product, and being able to just enjoy it with them for, you know, the 2 minutes you stand there and make your purchase.
I picked up two things off my quadruple P list. And I only saw these two. Paralyzer, the Persuader. The vehicle I picked up that I was most excited about, a Ninja Commando vehicle that's like an armored Jeep that you can like remove the armor. Got like a missile launcher on the back. It has four seats. It's awesome.
For G.I. Joe toys, I only got two things. I'm excited to bring home the Cobra Viper Glider and the Night Scrambler. I'm a huge APC guy. We have a couple APCs, an ATC, the CUDA, a custom, and now, finally, one of the three main Night Force vehicles that I really love, and the third one we needed to get. That Scrambler is beautiful.
Oh, yeah. That thing's awesome.
I had a pre-setup deal that I have accidentally mentioned on the show two or three times and have stopped myself from elaborating. That way I didn't have to double back if something fell through. I finally got the Old Snake and Stealth Bat 3-pack. I don't care one way or another about Transformers. For some reason, I can't let the crossover sets go. These items are not cheap. Can't figure out for the life of me why I just have to have these items.
Because that set is awesome. That's why.
And the idea of a transforming bat is amazing. But paired in with that deal was the club's Eco Striker. Something kind of crazy happened this weekend that I did not anticipate. I knew I was getting the Eco Striker, and I was browsing the floor, and I stumbled into a deal on some zombie steel brigades. There was no way I could walk away from. So that put me at only needing one figure to complete all of the figures from that convention that are specifically themed to the Zombie Initiative. And at the end, literally we were tearing down and I sprinted across the floor to make this decision. I picked up the Zombie Initiative Outback and the Septic His Tank. Two items I previously decided I didn't need. So basically, I'm down to now one item for having all of the club's figures that are actually tied to that box set. It's going to be fun to hunt down, and I'm definitely going to be taking a long road. It is an expensive vehicle, but now it gives me this like refreshing look on a box set that I've always loved anyways.
So what is the vehicle that you're still missing?
It is a Steel Brigade-themed VTOL-style Ghost Hawk. They changed the name twice, and I'm such a great G.I. Joe fan that I can't keep it straight. Yes, it is a really good-looking, the Pursuit of Cobra Ghost Hawk, but with a clear canopy, and it's in this really cool, almost marbly silver. It's paired with a Steel Brigade Delta with an insane pair of camouflage pants that I love. It's kind of the magic to me of being here is I did not anticipate or even have a drive to complete this entire run from the Zombie Initiative set until I realized I was like three items away. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to close it out.
The first day, the only G.I. Joe thing I got was five custom G.I. Joe weapons. Everything else was 6-inch Star Wars. My favorite, probably like this really cool Echo. It looks like it's a combination of Fives, Rex, and Echo. And it's awesome. And I bought a fourth Ahsoka Trooper. Like, we already have three. Why do we need a fourth?
Army buildings in the blood.
Those Ahsoka Troopers are sick, though.
Instead of picking up a bunch of Joe toys, I ended up grabbing Dio Display's bar setup and lab setup, as well as Rust hit me with a custom sculpted Steel Brigade head, which was originally meant for something that I was supposed to get this weekend that I did not get. And this is why, you know, Joel, I never talk about the things that are in process. Like this weekend, I was supposed to have this thing that I was crazy excited about. It was the thing that I was most excited about for the whole weekend. It's not here. So now I'm supposed to get it at the end of July. We'll see. That cast Steel Brigade head and then Duffy's bar and lab are incredible to me. You know, I like Chuckles a lot. He's not Roadblock to me, but I love me some Chuckles. And even as a kid, Chuckles was always the guy that infiltrated and opened the door from the inside, you know?
To clarify, the head is 12-inch.
Yes, the head is 1/6 scale. You're right. So the bar set for Chuckles to be able to sit and schmooze, or I told A he could set up that cartoon scene where Mutt and Flint are in the Cobra uniforms and they go in, they fight all the Cobras and they meet Shipwreck. You can do all that now that Duffy has put together this great bar. And then the lab is also awesome, as we have a ton of Eco Warrior stuff. That was more fun to me this weekend than buying Army Builder figures or hunting some crazy rare figure. It gives us something to glue together and add to our sort of growing playset area. And Dio Display Duffy is incredibly fun to talk to.
Joel, do you have a hot wire?
I do not have it. It is one of the weird club, super cool figures that looks insane, very stylized, very expensive.
If you had one, that lab would be perfect for you. I've seen the file card. Hotwire is like a scientist, like a scientist you would see in the movies. Mad scientist. Now my poison potion is complete!
He does have a truly insane face sculpt.
Oh, yeah. On the card, that face is crazy.
I stayed true to one of my goals this weekend, which was to not just relentlessly buy duplicate army builders. Of course, I got a few.
Of course.
I did not burn hundreds of dollars on duplicate army builders that I already had. still on the topic of toys, but tying it in with something else, I attended Marauder Mayhem 2. Unfortunately, due to some shipping issues, some of the stuff they wanted to preview for us was not there. We did get to see a lot of amazing images of stuff that's coming down the pipeline. I cannot wait for the fall of 2022. But they did give us first crack at the show exclusives and pretty much everything they had at the booth. I was very proud of myself for the amount of money I didn't spend at the Marauder event. And it also helps that they put a limit. That way the line would, you know, move fairly fast. But that event was, you know, it's a highlight for sure. And it's something I hope they continue to do. I did stumble into an item I never thought I would find here. And I just found a Mezco exclusive box set from one of their, I don't know if it was at one of the New York City cons or if it was an online thing or what it was, but regardless, I did not expect to find this exclusive Mezco bundle set on the floor at Joe Fest. And I honestly walked by it 15 or 20 times before I was, oh, that is a Gomez.
And you only have one of the Hazard Commander Gomez.
That was the House of the Golden Dragon, right?
Yes.
Wait, isn't that the Ninja Gomez?
Yeah.
Oh, I want that thing. Give it to me.
The accessory loadout on that figure is, I don't even know what to say.
It's pretty wild.
We will touch back on the accessories when I get home and can open that because there's so much and it is so detailed. And I'm actually excited to see how sharp some of these edged items are.
They can get sharp. There's a guy named Jason. He takes figures, turns them into Slaughter's Marauders Custom. I got three from him. A Topside, Charbroil, and Sci-Fi. Before I got these guys, I had a Quick Kit. That Cocoon is sick by itself. These guys, even sicker.
I'm done with toys. Like, I didn't get any other toys to talk about. However, I did grab two things that are kind of cool. One was a buddy was walking around with the old school HeroQuest game, missing like one miniature, which I'll have to source from eBay, I'm sure. But I yelled at him and I was like, when did you get that? And he said he was selling it. So I bought it on the spot. And when we get home, I'm excited to introduce it to A, so I'm sure we'll probably talk about that here once that's happened. But the thing that excited me the most, kind of as I'd mentioned in the mini episode, last Joe Fest, I had told Jason Sobel I would send him a message and we would talk about a commission, and I never did. So before the show ever started, while we were setting up, I ran by the table and we had a great conversation. After setup and the show's open, I bring my book to him. He wanted to do Beachhead. I don't have a Beachhead in the book. He did an incredible piece. It's Beachhead crouched down with a knife. There's a dead trooper behind one leg and a river of blood. It's great. I'm excited to have this in the book.
And it looks like He killed the trooper with the knife because, like, the tip of the knife's, like, all bloody.
Yes, that's true.
Awesome.
It is awesome. Not only was Jason incredibly sweet and great to work with, he had his son Max with him who cracked me up. And Max made me laugh all weekend. And I'm really glad we got to become very friendly with them. And they were sat right beside our friends, Ron and Jenny, so we got to talk to the Rudats a lot. But after Jason was done, Mark Pennington, who, you know, is a G.I. Joe designer, designed several of my favorite G.I. Joes, he chose to do Outback. He named off three or four, and before I could even say anything, he said, I'm going to do Outback. And I said, perfect. That Outback is incredible. It looks like he's ziplining or, you know, something. He's got the flashlight in the air. There's paint splatters everywhere. It's really cool. It's such a good piece. And then before the show could end, Alex Sanchez, who's been doing some incredible issues lately, wasn't able to finish it, and he took my book home. So I don't have pictures for this, but I will when I get it back from Alex. I'm not even going to say what Alex is doing because I haven't gotten it back from him.
You don't know what he's doing?
Oh, I know what he's doing. I'm just not going to say now.
Oh.
Because I don't have it in hand, and that's just a rule I have for myself. Thank you, Jason, and thank you, Mark. Thank you, Max. Once I get this back from Alex, I'm telling you, man, I couldn't be more excited.
I will close out my haul section / toy section on today after a panel. Really had kind of decided that I was done spending money, which, you know, that obviously never works. But I was cruising up an aisle, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw the 2013 Joe-Con box set bagged. So the bagged box set, which is the Night Force set, probably the best price I've ever seen. Coincidentally, across the aisle from them, there was a box with the foam and the pin. I just did a couple quick eBay searches and realized that I could sell my duplicates when I get home and make this box set even more affordable. This was one of those purchases where I really needed a voice of reason. I'm at a point where I'm going to be going home with a massive amount of money, and I was very happy and proud of myself and also satisfied. I got a ton of stuff. So I hit the hallway. I called Nicole and I was like, all right, here's the deal. She hit me with a thing she always says to me. She's like, well, you know, I don't really care what you do with your money, but that seems like a very good idea.
The voice of reason has spoken.
So I walked back in. It was this surreal moment where I picked up the sealed bag set and was just like, I can't believe I literally just bought a convention box set. I don't know. I could gush about this for, you know, 45 minutes and that would be very boring. This will be an item that, much like a lot of other big ticket items that I get, that I'll never forget, like the story and everything based around it, because like the memory of the hunt and the find and the circumstance is just as happy for me as just looking at the toys. Something I've been waiting to kind of close on doesn't count as a haul because it's not an item of purchase. We're hanging in the lobby and word was getting spread around that some of the O-ring style sightline figures were being hid throughout the hotel. He's a little restless, so I decided to ask him, hey, do you want to go try to find this? And A and I spent about 35 or 40 minutes flipping through the plants of the hotel. I'm opening every drawer and cabinet that is in the lobby. I'm lifting up furnitures. I'm lifting up curtains. And then I'm going to pass it to A because he actually found the figure.
Came up. We looked around. I did a full circle around the upper lobby. I went to check some drawers. And the plant on the table, there was a sight line, like spying, like, now what is Cobra doing?
I would like to give a very special thank you to the hotel employee that was looking at us very puzzled and in a low voice said, the hell are you guys looking for? So I kind of gave him the backstory of this sight line figure and the thing. And he was like, well, hey, come right down here with me. And he walked me down the hall and pointed me to a sightline so I could add one to my collection.
Nice.
It was a funny and interesting thing watching that guy watch us.
During all of this, somebody approached me because they saw you guys go up and they had asked if I was going to go look for one too. I didn't feel right about that. Considering what sightline is, I just said one per household. If he finds one, there's one in our household. We'll put it in a case. We'll put it in his room. I don't think it would be right for me to go search for one also. If you're not sure what sightline is, the O-ring is that very special figure they made for Goggles, who was a huge member of the community and quite important to a lot of things. And Hasbro honored him with a full 4-inch figure as well. We explained all that to A, and we're very excited that now A has a sightline figure for our collection. And you have one as well, Joel.
I was a huge fan of the Declassified podcast. It's a very special figure for me, and I can't wait to pair it with the 50th anniversary sightline. Have a nice little display of those two figures. You know, it'll, I guess, be my only O-ring on display.
So I told you I got up at like 2:30 in the morning, got Alexander up at 3. We hit Todd's at 4. We were already on the road by 4:15. We rolled into Augusta at like noon, caught up with you. met Rust and Andrew and a few others, Todd A. and I jumped in your van and we hit Top Dog, which was a cool joint. I mean, that place had comics, tons of toys, Warhammer miniatures. You pushed me out of the miniatures aisle several times as I'm taking pictures of different things and showing you different stuff and talking about the paints. We all patroned them a little bit and then rolled out. But
it's always really awesome to me when I walk into local toy shop anywhere in the country and see that they stack some of the independent 1/18 scale toy lines. Like, not a trade-in, but like they were in stack. And they had some Animal Warrior figures. They had boss fight stuff. They were my backup plan in case Spiro or Roma didn't have those figures there. I was going to shoot back the Top Dog Saturday night and grab the wave, but I didn't have to.
We talked about that in the corner of the shop for several minutes when you were unsure, but that's where we take for granted guys like Roma, who always have this in stock at show floors, but you never see it in stores. So it was very cool to have that conversation in the back and make sure that you had a backup plan.
They also had a lot of Mezco stuff behind the counter.
They did have a few Mezcos. I mean, we were looking. After that, we hit Dead Media, which was a tiny shoebox of a joint, but wow. They didn't have anything high-end I was looking for, but they had a ton of DVDs and VHSs and books, and true to their name, they carried a lot of Dead Media. It was very cool to see, even though it was hard for me to pull anything out of there.
I found a Pink Floyd DVD that I wanted. If we would have had more time, or if I was there on a day that I wasn't kind of antsy to get back to the hotel, like, I could have spent 4 hours just going through all the different DVDs, because he had like tons and tons of like really cool old sci-fi shows and tons of cartoons from like 70s, 80s. Just stuff you don't ever see. And they're really, you know, that's not really the type of store that you find in a lot of places.
Anywhere. You don't find that anywhere. I mean, he had Laserdisc. If I had a Laserdisc player, I would have bought the Laserdisc Star Wars. I thought about buying it just to have it, just to say I have the unmastered Star Wars on Laserdisc, but legitimately, it would have ended up in a box.
I have a couple Laserdiscs that we display on our DVD shelves just because it looks like a record and it's neat and it's, you know, it's a giant 12 by 12 piece of art, but, you know, both of those were pulled for $1 a piece at, you know, like a thrift store.
Right. That Star Wars was not a dollar.
No.
You know, other than that, we did the normal, had lunch, rolled around, whatever. Last year, the Thursday crew was very small. A dozen of us, maybe. 2 dozen tops. This year, there were a bunch of people on Thursday. And so the Thursday night lobby hangout, I mean, it was thick on a Thursday. At around 1:30, I was feeling that like bad dad guilt, and I took Alexander to bed. So A got to stay up to like 1:30 on Thursday night. He begged to stay up longer. But if you take out that 1 hour time difference from Central to Eastern, he still was up for 22 hours.
I think I probably came in not that long after you, kind of dreading knowing that we had to actually work in the morning.
That was the night that all four of us went down at a fairly similar time, but we were not on the same schedule after that.
Yeah, and it's ironic because this leading up to this, I just kept being like, well, you know, you're going to have A with you, and, you know, you'll probably end up going to bed earlier, and I'll, you know, it'll kind of be my excuse, and I did not.
To be fair, I did go to bed earlier than I ever would have had he not been with me, although you did not use me as an excuse.
I went completely off the deep end.
Friday morning, we hit it early with the load in. I think at one point, you, me, Todd, A, Ryan, this guy Daniel, and a couple other people were all helping at Todd's booth, like getting it set up. At that point, I realized there's too many people, and so I wandered off and went and got our stuff and went and set our table up. And our table took like 2 minutes. When I say our table, like we set up as the Order of Battle. So on our table was Order of Battle pod stickers, our Night Force Order of Battle stickers, and the GI Alexander stickers. And then I threw out one of each shirt, the glow-in-the-dark Order of Battle, which glows so strong in the dark. And then our graffiti logo. Under the table was our recording equipment, which that was our goal for the week, or weekend, I guess. We were going to record from the booth. We're going to make it happen. We're going to interview people. We're going to ask people to give us, this is the Order of Battle, sound off.
Yeah, we did not do that. To be fair, I think Sunday we attempted, and at one point your microphone was off. Then we hit reset, and the irony is that we actually had a nice little thing going on Sunday morning. As soon as we kind of had, you know, we weren't aiming to record 40 minutes, but we had this nice little burst coming, and it was going so good, and then all of a sudden somebody came to the booth next to us, and it was just talking over us to talk to the guy trying to sell something, so we just kind of were like, well, we are sitting next to a guy trying to sell stuff, so I guess we'll just kill this right now.
It ended up where Rhino and Andrew had two tables on the corner, and then we set up one table beside him, and then we were set up beside Mark II Design. So they had like a 3D printed Firefly submachine gun. They had a 3D printed Cobra Commander gun, life size, like 1-to-1 scale. You could hold them. They were selling those unpainted, unglued together. And then they also had Snowjob's XLMR as a prototype. Plus, they had a bunch of 1/12 scale G.I. Joe weapons. I didn't really talk to Mark of Mark II Design, but I talked to the dude helping him. We had a ton in common. We talked about Robotech and Macross and Space Battleship Yamato. We talked about HeroQuest. Friday, when the preview show opened, it was kind of bedlam. I mean, for a preview night, it was hot and heavy. Things were thick. People were running. At one point, I went out to go grab one of the customs that a buddy had bought a ticket for, couldn't make it. And the line was so thick, I was like, we'll get it tomorrow.
It was very reminiscent of 2019. It didn't feel quite as claustrophobic, obviously, because this new convention space is massive. It is not a ballroom in a hotel. It is a convention space.
I think it's about 40,000 square foot. And last year, where everything, all the booths had to have a certain number of space between them, certain feet of space between them. This year, everything got packed together. So there was like, what, double the vendors? Maybe even 2.5 times the vendors?
It felt like 2.5. Like it was, I mean, we'll just go right into the sales floor. That was a lot of vendors. Every inch of that floor, you could find something to buy.
Yeah, it was thick.
And then there's two vendors in the main hallway.
And those vendors, from what I understand, killed. They also had the customs all displayed in the main hallway where the line was. Kind of near the end of the floor, A and I wandered over and saw that Slaughter was there Friday night. Not everybody was, but Slaughter was. So we got a chance to meet him, talk to him for 10 or 15 minutes, take pictures, get an autograph, and move on. But as soon as the floor ended, the lobby swap began, and you had to run off even before the show closed because the Marauders event.
Yeah, I attended Marauder Mayhem 2, which obviously we've already talked about me attending, but due to shipping delays and stuff being held in customs, they were supposed to have a couple of prototypes for some items that haven't been announced yet that I will not announce, but they're supposed to have a couple of prototype items that we are going to be able to either touch or get up close and personal with. They showed us a lot of amazing stuff, and a big portion of what they showed us was the new Kickstarter that launched tonight and funded in under 2 hours, which is Vietnam.
What was the funding goal?
$64,000.
Okay.
So they went smart, smaller goal with a lot of stretch goals. Getting it funded will give people the confidence to throw more money at it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. How long did that last? Because you bounced at about 7:30 to go to it. And it was on the schedule as 8 to 11, but
I think I dipped out of there at like 10:45-ish.
Wow. So it was almost a full like three and a half hours.
Yeah, it was very cool. There was no dinner this year, which I was fine with. They had refreshments and snacks for us. I'd rather spend less time, you know, with them dishing out food and all that stuff to just get right to the goods, you know?
Last year, the whole food situation and them trying to be polite to people that were rude to them and didn't show up on time, like it started, what, an hour, hour and a half late. So it sounds like it was a much smoother this year.
They informed everybody, or they told everybody to get there a half hour early. There were a couple people late, but by the time they were late, it was only 5 or 10 after, so it was like a lot less egregious than an hour. One of the new things that they brought was they debuted some new color schemes for their existing bodies. Part of why this is such a big deal is because they have a new, I don't know if it's a new machine or what it is, but they're able to get an even more detailed deco, and they were already, the camo they did for the German World War II Panzer units is an insanely complicated and very small camouflage pattern, and I was blown away with that. The stuff they showed now, and especially the stuff they have teased for, like the Tiger-style Vietnam camo, I just can't wait to see it. And it's like I already have all these crazy hopes and dreams, but they showed off a lot of other stuff. We'll save the Vietnam talk for another episode, because I'm sure once all the stretch goals are hit, I'll be, you know, screaming into this microphone. They have some stuff coming just straight up to order. No Kickstarter, a bunch of new stuff. I think people are going to lose their minds because they're going to, I'm purposely keeping it vague, but they're going to supply us with 1/18 scale things that we haven't had proper ever in the modern line.
It is really, really kind to my wallet that I am not a modern scale collector.
Yeah, you just bypassed it and went straight to Mezco, so...
Oh, yeah, well, you know, there's that. Well, while you were doing that, I was looking at the lobby swap, and there was this tiny room it was supposed to happen in, but it was far away from the Marauders event. The Marauder guys didn't have to yell over the background noise of the lobby swap like they did last year. But that room was too small, and people just spilled out of that into the hallway and then into the cross hallway and then into the upstairs part of the lobby. It was mayhem. It was wild. I was blown away at the size of the lobby swap this year. At the corner of that cross hallway was a wedding rehearsal. I felt very sympathetic for the wedding party. Just on the other side of a glass doors of the lobby swap was a Masonic meetup. So there was a lot going on. This hotel had three big events that they didn't spread out. They just put us on top of each other. When we start slinging toys, we are loud. The lobby swap just flowed sort of seamlessly. As it petered out, it just became a hangout. The booze was flowing. The embellished stories were going. Being that it was Friday night and A and I needed to get up at 6 in the morning, I pulled him to bed at 12:30 Friday night. I don't know when you and Todd scrolled in.
I want to say like maybe 1:30. I feel like Friday I kind of called it semi-responsible too. I had a blast with Todd, following him around and watching him wheel and deal, because he is truly remarkable when it comes to toy hunting. Yeah, it's just, he is, I love watching the man work.
At some point, we have to get him on here and just let him go. I mean, he could fill an hour by himself just talking about toy hunting.
He gave me some shit on, I think, Saturday or Sunday morning. Then we had the microphone set up and he leaned over. Hello, Order of Battle. It's me, Todd Henderson. Screw me. I'm never invited on the show. And he went on and it was fun. So
you should have hit record.
Yeah, I know I should have.
Saturday morning, like, I got up at 6. I got A up, and he was miserable getting up that early. You know, he's 9. They sleep 10 hours a night. And I'm like, hey, man, it's been 5 hours. Get up. We went to the Sergeant Slaughter breakfast. And I had told him we were going to do that. So he was excited. It's a hotel buffet breakfast. It's never going to be great. But Sergeant Slaughter was a banquet table over. He talked to that table for a while. He came over and talked to the next table and our table and told stories and answered questions. At the end, as he was taking questions, A had his hand up. He had a question for Slaughter. Slaughter decided to end his breakfast with A's question. And A's question was, why did Hasbro want you to be an action figure? Slaughter is long-winded. I'm verbose. That man is verbose. And he starts talking about his entry into his wrestling career as a heel and how Vince McMahon's father wanted him to stay a heel and how he could never be a face. Junior wanted him to be a face and how that happened. And A is looking at me like, what's this have to do with Hasbro? And I was like, just let the man tell his story. And he rolls that right into how Hasbro was looking for a human face to support the line. The things fell into place and it just worked. And so A was super excited. And in the end, he got to shake hands with them. You know, we finished that. We went back to the room to drop stuff off. I sent him to the floor. Well, I took care of a couple of things. By the time I got to the floor Saturday morning, you were down there before I was. I walked in late because of the breakfast. The floor was already wild.
There was a lot of vendors that didn't make it on Friday. So all of those vendors that were setting up were also cruising the floor. So there was a good little crowd running around. I found something that Todd was looking for. When I came down a half hour before early bird, the line was long. Like, reminded me of last year when I got in line really early. I think last year I waited in line like over an hour for early bird. And I'm glad I did, because I was able to grab the things I wanted and then get stuck in the Marauder. The first couple hours of Saturday were hectic. Hectic to the point where I tried to do a couple laps and then I ended up just kind of like squatting at the booth. I grabbed, you know, the one item I was really, really wanting to get before the doors opened anyway. So it was crazy. It was great, and it's always exciting to see like that many people. All the booths were packed out.
I only covered maybe one quarter of the floor Saturday, like all Saturday. The floor was open from what, 8 to 5 or 9 to 5, something like that. There were whole sections of the floor I never even got to see. I made it a point to tell you, like, I am going to make the 3D Joe's panel. It's going to be this huge panel where they're sitting down with Pennington and Rudat and all these others. They're going to take a buck and they're going to make an action figure that Carson had mailed to Hasbro back in the 80s and got a letter back from Hasbro. That's something that I used to do a lot as a kid, and I asked my mom to mail them to Hasbro. I never got a letter, so I don't know if she ever mailed them, but I used to do that a lot. He actually got a letter back, and now that he's friends with all these creators, they were going to go through the process of how they were making this action figure a real thing. I wanted to see it. And then Jason happened to Jason. I ended up in a conversation, and I look at my phone, and I've already missed 35 minutes of a 50-minute panel. Wah, wah.
It was really hard to remember when and where we were supposed to be.
It's because we're getting conversations and we just lose track. You know, and one of the things that I am known for is not staying at a booth. Like, I'm known for it when I go to comic book conventions and I help sell independent comic books. I'm known for it when I go to toy conventions and I help Todd with Destro's Toy Den. So at our own table, I struggled to sit still. And I noticed that A did too. He is absolutely my kid.
I don't think anyone would confuse that. We both caught the declassified panel.
We did.
That has kind of been a big goal of mine, to catch a declassified panel. It was awesome. It is very cool to hear, you know, to hear people talk about the other side of G.I. Joe that most people don't care or research. But then also within that, to hear one of the most well-known, like, variant guys talk about a mistake he made and be like, that is probably my biggest collecting regret, is putting that out there.
So I met Pat, not Picard Stewart, at the 29 Joe Fest. Just in passing, we were both shopping at the same booth, and I mentioned, hey, I like Articulated Points. It's a cool web series. His mind is so sharp that the next time I saw him at a show, he was saying hi, like, hey, how's it going, man? Like, oh, I saw your last show. The dude is on time, like, very sharp. And then chatting with him, he's very cool to talk to. Didn't get a chance to talk to him much this time. A lot was going on. And by the time we got a chance to sit down and talk, it was like 3 a.m. on Sunday night. That panel was neat. And so from my perspective, variants and things like that are a huge O-ring thing. How did that panel help you in terms of the modern side?
A lot of the modern variants aren't, like, unfortunately, aren't really variants. From what it seems, they're kind of like designed in the line, like running changes or one of the other phrases that they had for this sort of thing. It's more interesting to me to hear people dive into, and this has been said a million times, but really nobody had any idea that G.I. Joe would become what it became. No one had any idea that in 2021, there would still be guys actively hunting and discovering new variants on a figure that came out in the mid-80s. Where we are spoiled in the internet age and the fact that, you know, since I've been collecting toys, I've had a smartphone. Anything that you need, anything that you want, you know, and when Yo-Jo was up and running in its prime, everything was there. They even had the variants listed on there. But again, most of the quote-unquote variants within the modern line were purposely done.
That's where I wasn't sure, because it's a blank spot in my knowledge, because it's a blank spot in my money and time.
What's really neat to me is just hearing about, I know that the Slaughter's boot logo is kind of this massive topic within the community, and, you know, whether it's considered pre-production or variant or whatever it may or may not be, but again, just kind of like this, people are paying attention and hunting down things that if our fandom wasn't our fandom, I can assume that in all the other collecting fandoms, there are people like the people we have, but I guess I don't really ever hear other communities like reaching out to the creators and inviting guys like Ron Rudat and, you know, the other names that you've mentioned that I never remember. There's this weird side to G.I. Joe that is way more investigative and way more like tracing everything back. And maybe because I don't think you could really do that with Transformers because they're coming from Japan.
I think with Transformers and Gundam and things like that that are heavy in Japan, they're doing that on the Japanese side. Or at least I know they are with Gundam because I've seen a lot of like the old creators still active in the community. But I don't know, you know, how prevalent it is on the Transformers side. And I don't know how prevalent it is with like Turtles or Mask or, I don't know, you name it. The archive sites aren't anything like Yo-Jo. I mean, I guess I'm speaking out of term. G.I. Joe does seem special in that regard. Pat and Sam and the D-Class guys, listening to them discuss the way they try and put the scientific method and the classification method into these things as variants. Or one of the things that I thought was really interesting was they were talking about mold numbers and how that's not really a variation as it is. Oh, I don't remember the term they used, but they were saying how it can't be considered a variation simply because from one item to the other, the mold numbering could be completely different. So chasing mold numbers is sort of a personal thing, but not necessarily a variation in terms of the way we look at variations. That was cool to me. I had never heard that conversation before. But I know plenty of people that have tried to get 8 AVAC backpacks so that they have an A through D hard and A through D soft. You know, there's 6 Firefly phones. You know what I mean? Like,
I love listening to people who have been collecting for X amount of years or have never stopped collecting. And I love watching. I saw someone get hyper excited about getting a shoebox. You know, I want to say maybe 4 to 5 guys looking at, there was 2 different licensed mid-80s G.I. Joe scuba sets for kids, like goggles, flippers. Like, that stuff is so cool to me, and I'm so far from having the space and most of that stuff is not cheap. I really love watching people who find a way, not only just, you know, because you don't have to come to a convention to buy. Like, you can come to the convention to just hang. But like, I love seeing people that have like, all right, well, I have everything that I want toy-wise. You know, I have a lot of paperwork. You know, this, I have that, I have this. And now I'm focused on licensed items.
I have no intention, no inclination to chase licensed items, the ephemera. But I know and have a few friends that do, and it's super neat to see. I love seeing it. It's just never going to be a thing I chase. Outside of the lunch boxes and thermoses, I have the backpack and fanny packs, but that's pretty close to the end of my licensed ephemera rope.
I was born in 89. You know, when I was old enough to be aware, I had really missed the G.I. Joe boom, obviously. You might think about it more because you have a kid, but, you know, when you walk into like a Target, a Walmart, even a Dollar General, like you can find licensed Star Wars shirts and Fortnite shirts and Minecraft shirts and all these. You can find all sorts of different Star Wars shirts all across the board. And you kind of don't think about it because it's like, oh, yeah, it's Star Wars. Of course, Star Wars is, you know, Star Wars is Star Wars. It's a juggernaut. But it's fun to think back like, oh, look at all this crazy G.I. Joe stuff.
At one point, G.I. Joe was the juggernaut. Yeah.
Everybody listening to this show, I'm sure, has seen the pictures from the 80s of Toys R Us aisles that are both sides G.I. Joe all the way down. And then obviously you always get 5,000 to 6,000 comments of, boy, I wish I had a time machine. Look at those prices. I mean, I don't really chase O-rings. There's no way I'm going to start chasing 80s licensed memorabilia. But I do like lunchboxes, and I love like the garbage cans and all that neat stuff. And if I ever stumbled across that stuff, but you know, that stuff in collectible shops, you know, has a collectible price tag, and it's not what I'm chasing.
After D-Class finished up, Mark Weber had a panel, but A was going to mutiny. He was hungry, and he was tired of sitting. He is my son. He wanted to move. So I missed the Weber panel, and I really wanted to catch it. I know you missed it as well, so I don't know what he went over. I'm going to have to find somebody who can give me a breakdown, but I am really upset that I missed Mark Weber's panel.
Me too.
I do know that after his panel and after the show closed, there was a drink and draw, and there was bingo. And my understanding from what I've heard is that both of those were very successful and a lot of fun. That's two more things for people to do at this show other than just shop and get boozed up in the lobby. The lobby swap was going on like right after the show was over while drink and draw and bingo were happening. But you and I ended up running out and having dinner with a big group of people. But when we got back, the lobby swap was going on. There were people at the bar. I ended up in some conversations, realized what time it was. A and I followed our friend Shannon into the lobby swap and found the G.I. Joe Rec Room Hall of Fame banquet. Of course, I was late. I walk in. Everyone's making fun that I'm late. That was a really nice event that Ed does every year at this show. You know, Eric, who was on here a few weeks back, he made up shirts for everybody. That was part of it. It was very nice, even though I missed, you know, half of it. I don't know what you were doing at that point because I don't think you were with me. But afterward, we ended up linking back together as the lobby swap wound down and the lobby hang started to take over. It's like 1 a.m. You and Duffy are in a corner talking about 4-inch stuff. A is sitting there with a bunch of adults. Everyone's drinking, telling stories, having a good time. He's in the middle of all of us, laughing and carrying on. And I think we got to bed somewhere around 2:30. You were later than us. We beat you to bed.
Like, you guys actually were kind of the linchpin. You guys were like, hey, yeah, we got to go. And then it was like really not much after that where everybody else kind of dispersed. I might have been 15, 20 minutes after you, but I got super sucked into a conversation that I love, which is the vast and hard world of 1/18th world building throughout multiple brands.
That is definitely something that the two of you were able to go deep on because you guys were not even with us.
Yeah, and that happened two nights in a row. It was there was a part A and a part B.
It took me 30 minutes to get A out of bed Sunday morning.
Sunday was rough for me. I think I was up and out of there right before or right after. I don't remember which one, but Sunday was so hard to get up.
You left before we left because A wouldn't get up.
Yes.
But I was showered and ready to go before you left.
With the early bird, and then even when general admission hit, it was still busy, don't get me wrong, but it was like not bumping. It was great and comfortable.
It picked up. It got really busy midday, but it started very slow, and I think that is an artifact of how late everything was going. I mean, I've left out some of the late night room swaps that I ended up in. You know, I ended up on the 7th floor and the 9th floor and a couple other rooms, going through people's stuff and having conversations and drinking beers. So, I mean, I guess it's not that surprising, but yes, Sunday started slow. It did get there. Dude, I got to tell you the story because it's one of the coolest things and also one of the things that I'm kicking myself the most for.
Hit me.
Friday, I stop by Jason Sobel's table and I give him my art book. We talk about the mini episode we did on him. We talk about some of our favorite artists and other things. He chooses who he wants to put in my book. I move on. Saturday, we chat a few times. I get my book back from him and I give it to Mark Pennington. Mark and I end up talking about, not G.I. Joe, we end up talking about family. My son, his grandson, running through the woods, the way our grandfathers treated us. We just have this great conversation. And this is Mark Pennington. I mean, he's one of the creators. Iron Grenadiers, Hit and Run. I mean, you know, I'm stoked. He's sitting right beside Ron and Jenny, who I talk to a bunch because I already have a relationship with them. We're very friendly. It's always wonderful to see them. I talked to Jason some more, and his son is killing me. I'm dying with laughter every time I talk to Jason and his son. Sunday, I stop by and I get my book from Mark, and he does an incredible piece of a character he wanted to do, and I drop my book off with Alex Sanchez. And I'm not talking about my book right now because Alex Sanchez took my book home. So when he gets it back to me, then I will talk about my art. You know how I am. Here's where I'm kicking myself, because I just told you all this great stuff, right? I say to Mark, last night when we showed up at Beamy's, I saw you sitting in the dining room drinking a beer. We had talked Saturday during the show when I gave him my book, and we talked about all the family stuff. Sunday morning, he says, well, why didn't you sit down with me? I was by myself. We could have continued our conversation. I enjoy talking to you. Damn it.
Well, there's always the fine line.
100%.
Feeling intrusive or, you know, feeling like you're overstaying your welcome. And I definitely get it. I get both sides of everything you're feeling and doing right now. But
if he had seen me and waved me over, I would have joined him. 100%. But seeing him, I was definitely not going to walk up to him in a restaurant. The show floor's closed. He's off the clock. You know what I mean? Like, but when he said that, I was just like, ah, come on. But yeah, if he had seen me and been like, ah, come on over, I absolutely would have joined him. He didn't see me. He didn't wave me over. I was never going to walk up to him. That felt very intrusive to me. I would never have done it. But I am kicking myself because, you know. And maybe he was just being polite Sunday morning. Maybe he didn't mean it. I don't know. We'll never know because it didn't happen.
Something that did happen, my professional segue, you and I were able to jump into the Grindstone panel.
Oh, man. So this is where you're going to start collecting O-ring.
Well, we'll see how far it goes. This will realistically, at least at a base level, be my entry into collecting O-ring at a very minimal level. I will not go backwards just because the Killer Whale story, the prices of things are absolutely outrageous.
I'll get your list to Todd and he'll start pulling some O-rings for you.
Thanks. It was very awesome for me because I am, you know, obviously I'm not an O-ring guy. You know, I do like the O-ring stuff. I grew up playing with the Valor versus Venom Spy Troops O-ring stuff. You can understand why I don't have strong nostalgic ties to that era of G.I. Joe. The passion behind these two guys and the insane care of detail to, like, not only do their own thing in a format that, never say never, but realistically probably not going to make it back to mass retail anytime soon, But also to pick up in the O-ring construction and not heavily rely on G.I. Joe impresses me. I really appreciate that they are starting something new in the format that people want and love, and it's in the same era as G.I. Joe, but it is not like, okay, well, that's clearly Flint, and that's Snake Eyes, and that's Lady J, and that's Scarlet. And
Grindstone Toys is the business name, but their toy line is call sign Longbow. They're on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook at Set. Their line is set in what, like 1985, 1986, runs through like 89, 90. It's the Cold War era. They're doing a special ops team that fights against the Russians, right? It feels very G.I. Joe, but to your point, it doesn't look like Scarlet. It doesn't look like Duke. It is military high fantasy. They are working hard to have the Russians, the Spetsnaz and everything, look and feel authentic. But they're not going with hardcore, authentic Army, Marines, Navy, Coast Guard, etc. It's high fantasy military, the same as G.I. Joe was. Those figures look so good. Troy and John and their team, they're doing something special with the hands, so we won't have broken thumbs. They're doing a little something special with the crotch, so we won't have broken crotches. But otherwise, it's an O-ring figure.
I mean, it literally has an O-ring.
Literally has an O-ring, metal rivets.
Metal T-bar.
It's incredible. And the fact that they've tested their gear in G.I. Joe hands and G.I. Joe gear in their hands, you know, makes it compatible the same way that Joy Toy and Acid Rain are compatible with Marauders Gunrunners and 50th and POC G.I. Joe. It's gorgeous.
And again, to just hammer this point one more time, it is compatible, but not the same.
100%. I know they're going to do some homages to G.I. Joe. There will be some things that are heavy callbacks to G.I. Joe, even to the point of being overly wink and a nod and a nudge. But those are special one-offs, not the whole line.
And it seems like they're kind of throwing some nods to some like legendary unreleased vintage items.
That's not where it ends. In their presentation, they said they wanted to do vehicles. The space in my home cried just a little, but my heart swelled when they were like, yeah, we want to do playsets and vehicles. I was like, oh, yes? And then they showed us a second toy line in the same arcing universe.
Before that, they showed us a 3D printed and built little trike vehicle with missiles clipped to the side and like,
you know, that looked like the rideable G.I. Joe trike.
Yes, and that's what I was going to say. Is that it was a callback to a one-to-one G.I. Joe item.
So there's your homage, a thing that was never a toy for the action figures, but was certainly a toy for children to ride on.
But yes, to continue to this expanded universe.
It's right up your alley. You go.
Their goal, and this I was actually really impressed with, and I actually spent some time talking to one of the guys. They're essentially throwing us like an adventure-based line. These were just black and white drawings. There's no color palette. So we don't know any of that stuff, but
in that black and white drawing, there were cryptids, creatures.
There was a seaplane.
Playsets. There were vehicles. That black and white drawing had it all.
Something I really liked, you know, they said, we understand that our military series, collectible shops will carry it, but like our actual only shot at retail space would be more of this adventure-based, some nods to Indiana Jones in there. It's amazing because I don't know how much of this you have seen. I have purposely went and hunted it out, but like if you go into like some of these big sporting goods stores like Bass Pro Shop and whatever these other ones are called, they have these weird 1/18 scale. Some of them use O-rings, some of them don't. Camping toys.
I've never heard of such.
So you can get trucks that tow boats that come with tents and dogs and coolers and all these cool little things. And some of the figures feature like a mock O-ring. Like it looks like an O-ring figure, but it's all kind of pegged together. They're terrible. The quality of the figures and the vehicles are very reminiscent of like the Walmart Adventure Force or whatever the hell that line is called.
So it's not Schleich.
No. And that's what kills me is that the vehicles are just a little too toyish in a very like cheap looking way. Now, I mean, granted, for $15 you're getting a truck, a trailer, a boat, a tent, two guys, a four, you know, it's not expensive. I would love to get these higher quality. I mean, especially, I guess it really depends on if I can fit my modern guys into, like, you know, the seaplane and the other vehicles they showed.
It doesn't matter. You're an O-ring collector now. Come on. Join me. Join us. The other part beyond Adventure Team, and honestly, I could fan on Adventure Team for a long while. They're also going to try and do a space joint. They have the rights to the name Starcom, but not the rights to the old original Starcom story and everything. Very reminiscent to what's happening with Action Force, except for they're doing O-rings. And it looks, their concept drawings looked incredible. So I don't know where they're going to go with it. They showed us less about that than they did the Adventure Team, even though that concept drawing was more finished than anything they showed us for Adventure. I could not be more excited. I'm all in. Hold me to that.
I will certainly back to the point of getting at least one of everything that's offered. Part of that falls into their passion, their care, how they present things, how they talked to me on the floor, knowing that Troy is a main designer for Marauder.
For Fan Club?
Yeah.
For Transformers? For...
Yeah, he's a freelance guy that has done work for the actual brands, and he's done works for the fan brands. He is a fan. You see him at the show, you see him buying stuff, you see him interacting. Like, he kind of lives that awesome life where he was a fan that wound up doing what he loved.
Troy aside, you know, John is doing the same thing with other third-party stuff, so he's one of the designers on the Complex series. At one point, he pulled out some Series 3 stuff, and I got to see it. You already know I'm a big Complex person, right? We brought home 17 more panels for Complex. A walked around the Complex setup and was asking Raging Spoon and John about Series 2. John is already a successful designer in his own right. So between him and Troy, like, I have every faith in what they're doing. I'm telling you, I'm all in.
And they're both massive fans of the line.
And collectors of the line, yeah.
I mean, same with Raging Spoon, same with Marauder, same with Boss Fight, same with Valiverse. They're all... It's amazing to see this new uptick of diehard fans making the plunge, filling the void of certain things, you know, that we'll never see at mass retail.
I sat through the After Action panel. A lot of good details and deep dive into their roadmap beyond Volume 1. And Volume 1... they were supposed to hand that out at this show, but there was one small problem. They chose to delay dropping the book to make sure that this one problem was taken care of. I would all day long take a 6-week delay over something not right.
Unfortunately, I had a family phone call I could not miss, but in the small portion that I got to sit in, I got to flip through the sample book. That book cannot get here soon enough.
It's so good. Instead of going deep into their panel, we sat down with them again, and that conversation will come out a little closer to the ship date of Volume 1.
I was able to catch the Spiro panel, the Animal Warriors of the Kingdom panel. It was a lot of fun. It was very cool to sit in there and see a lot of images of the 6-inch stuff, to see his future plans for that, and to hear him explain how he has engineered different parts of their clothing is not the word I want to use, but it's the best way to describe it, so that it looks like it's a solid piece, but then when you swing the legs out or you swing the arms out, there's breaks that don't look as awkward. There's still full range of articulation while having the skirt pieces on, and I was very happy to hear that at the very end, they assured us that they have not abandoned the 4-inch line, but they're not going to start the next phase of the 4-inch until they have finished the Kickstarter that they had started and promised.
We've talked about how I met Jason right after his first Kickstarter failed and his second was going to happen. I got to play with the original Animal Warrior prototypes. I really have for years and continue to wish him and his company and his toy line the best of luck. I think they're incredible looking.
Toys are awesome. As I said earlier, I scooped the entire wave of deluxe figures, and I am frustrated because I have not had a minute of time since I got home to even enjoy a single thing that I bought.
Well, we'll get there on that one.
We will get there.
I missed the Robert Atkins panel. With everything going on, kind of like the 3D Joes and kind of like the Mark Webber, I just missed the Robert Atkins. And I found out afterward, because I don't think you went to Robert Atkins either.
I missed it as well.
He was announcing a European comic project that he's working on that I have to find it. Whenever it comes out, I've got to find it because I need that. It's Robert Atkins. It's Blood for the Red Baron. I've got to find it. I've got to find out more about it. We'll get there.
So that pretty much closed out the official capacity of the show.
After all was said and done, there was another lobby swap on Sunday night.
It was a booming lobby swap.
Yeah, it was an impromptu, unscheduled. The only lobby swaps that were scheduled were Friday and Saturday. There was swapping on Thursday, and there was absolutely huge swapping on Sunday. We took a break from the lobby swap and the hangout to sit down with Josh and Roger. When we came back, the lobby swap was still happening, but was smaller. The hangout was taking over. Somewhere around midnight, 12:30, A fell asleep in a chair.
Sunday was complicated for me. I spent all day convincing myself that I would go to bed semi-reasonable.
Semi-reasonable, huh?
Well, in my defense, I kept asking the hotel for a cart so I could load my van. So that way in the morning, I could just breeze out with my suitcase. And I don't blame them. This weekend was chaos, you know, but it took until a shift change for someone to actually just open up the door and give me a cart. I probably got done loading my van at about 2 a.m. And I was frustrated with myself, exhausted. And I was like, okay, I need to walk by the lobby with this cart. I need to go down the elevator. I need to return it. I need to come up and I need to say goodnight and I need to go to bed.
None of that happened. I was in the lobby at that point and I was going from group to group talking and hanging out. A is asleep in a chair. And I saw you walk past the lobby as I looked down the stairs.
I made it to the elevator with my empty cart and Kavanaugh was on his way to bed and he said, hey, I'll walk with you. We got wrapped up in a conversation. I said, hey, I'll just ride up to your floor with you, and the next thing I know, I'm in his room for an hour and a half, just chatting, and I spent a copious amount of time hanging out and chatting with James, and it was awesome.
At 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm sitting there with Todd, Roma Collectibles, and the toy department crews. I mean, they have names, but it's their whole crews, right? It's not just Aaron and Neil and Kaufman, but more people. You had just finished hanging out with Rage and Spoon, and he came back down, I guess, because he shows up. Pat Stewart shows up, and Troy McKee shows up. And Todd and I, who had intended to go to bed an hour before this point, which is when I walked over to pick up A, and we start talking to Aaron, and I slide into a chair, and then Todd slides into a chair. We're all talking. This is 3 in the morning, and I'm like, hey, we got to really get to bed. We left them still going. I don't think they were anywhere close to finish. I carry A to the room.
I'm nowhere to be found.
Yeah, you're nowhere to be found. The light's out. We're chatting. And right as Todd goes, why are we talking? We're about to be in a car together for 7 hours. This is insane. You're right. Let's go to bed. And you walk in. It's 3:30 in the morning. Why not?
Absolutely amazing. Todd shouts from the other room. Oh. Look who's crawling in at 3:30, mister. I'm going to bed early on Sunday.
You come in and talk to us for a while.
Yes, I said naturally I come in and talk shop with you guys for about 20 minutes before I was like, I'm going to fucking die tomorrow. I have to fucking go to bed.
Now, Todd and I had already talked about this. We did set an alarm at 11 because checkout was at noon, but we had no intention of waking up early. We got up at 10:30 and you were gone. So I don't know what time you left.
I intended, if I would have went to bed on time, I wanted to be out of the hotel parking garage by 7:15.
Okay.
Did not happen. I left the hotel at about 8:15. I'll throw in a little caveat here. I went full trucker mode on the way down, got on the road at 7:15, had 3 stops, and I arrived to Augusta by like 9:25. I added about 35 minutes to my drive. I missed almost all the traffic. I did have a car across the road throw a massive piece of gravel and completely destroy my windshield on the way in. It was so loud that my whole body flinched and I ducked while I was driving.
Hey, at least you didn't jerk the wheel.
Seriously, because there was a median, a concrete wall on both sides of me because it was a construction zone. You know, there is a fun story in this weekend where I have to run out and pull my car out of the parking garage and meet the safe light guy and have him change my windshield and run back over, whatever. In theory, I was feeling confident on like Friday that I would be able to, you know, Monday would be nothing. Well, I slept probably 15, 16 hours for, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that being said, I got in the car. I'm making good time. I see some signs for road work. I'm like, okay, well, this shouldn't be too bad. And about a mile up the road, I am in park. For about 2.5 hours, I went maybe 10 miles. And this is somewhere in Virginia. But I got through there. I'd been, you know, on and off the phone all day with various people. I have a brother who lives in Baltimore. Him and I were chatting, and he was just like, hey, you're kind of driving right by here. Like, just stop. I finished my drive by hitting Baltimore. I crashed so hard. I slept so good. And then finished my drive and got home at 4 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon.
And this is why you haven't had a chance to check out your Spiro toys.
I had the illusion that I was going to get home Monday night and be great, go to work on Tuesday. No.
So conversely, we got up at 10:30, we showered, we packed, we took our time. The goal was to walk downstairs, load the car, eat at the hotel restaurant, and leave. Nice and comfortable. We get down there, and Todd, just like me, he's a talker. He gets in a conversation with Ed and with Matt on the way out. Hey, we're going to go to lunch with them. But Ed's meeting with the hotel, so who knows how long it's going to be. We run into Rhino and Mahalik and Kavanaugh. They're up for lunch. Rust had to take the shuttle back to the airport, so he didn't join us for lunch. We went and we had lunch at Beamy's with Ed and one of his daughters. Matt and his wife had already left. Cav, Mahalik, Todd, A and I. We wander back to the hotel. We run into Big Rich, who was great to meet. He ends up handing the Switch version of Operation Blackout. So that became his car ride distraction on the way home. Conversations flowing, everything else. We left the hotel a few minutes after 3 in the afternoon. So I walked in the house here after 11 p.m., I got to bed around 1 a.m., woke up Tuesday at 7 a.m. to go to work. This is why we were late putting this out. Even if you and I hadn't sat down to record tonight, parts we had recorded in Augusta, I haven't been able to finish editing. One of the things that was cool, you know, we set up a booth as a podcast. We gave away free stickers. We sold some shirts. Our Night Force shirt glowed bright in the dark. It was awesome. A gave out the G.I. Alexander shirts that I had made as a secret for him. He chose the list of people that got them. Enough people asked me about those shirts that I may do another run. We ran into 3 other podcasts. Jaron from Anything Joe's, who I've already met Jaron and Greg. I talk to Greg a lot. I don't talk to Jaron that much because he's more on Instagram and Greg is more on Twitter. Kind of like you and me. They live close to Kentuckiana, and I'm definitely excited to hang out with them. We ran into John, who hasn't launched his podcast yet, but he's reached out to us a few times to talk about it. And we ran into podcasts from the pit. I only ran into them like 1.5 times. You ran into them a couple times. But it was cool to know that other folks are out there. Would have loved to run into Mark Weber and talk to him, since he's, you know, 1/3 of what's on Joe Mind, as well as every other accolade that Mark has. but I legitimately only saw him as he was leaving the show with the Rudats while we sat in a panel. What do you do? Beyond that, Don was there, and Don, you know, we've already talked about Don. He's one of our good friends that we've met through G.I. Joeing and you and him doing customized Joes. A complained at me until I washed the Codename A Order of Battle mug that Don gave us so that he could drink out of it. I know we're throwing this in at the very end, but it was a long weekend, and these are things that I wanted to sort of isolate outside of everything else we've talked about. So Don and Big Rich, it was awesome running into them. Big Rich's kindness with A, and Don is one of our friends that we only get to see at this show. And then Jaren and John and Podcast from the Pit, is always fun to talk to these guys too.
Yeah, I got to spend some good FaceTime with Don. He always does the custom class, so it was like awesome to kind of, you know, hear him tell me about that and kind of on the cusp of wanting to do that, but it always falls in, you know, it's always like, well, Marauder's kind of my thing, I'll go do that.
Did he do Marauders with you?
No.
So next year he needs to do Marauders with you and you need to do JT Russell with him.
What's funny is I was supposed to help him grab a Marauder figure. He has been trying to strictly keep all of his customs within only using G.I. Joe product. And I keep being like, check the Marauders, check the Marauders, check the Marauders. I just echo everything you said. I'm not going to retread it because then it's just going to get annoying. But, you know, it was a blast meeting everybody. And I love all the G.I. Joe podcasts. So it's nice to put a face to the voice. Kind of to wrap it up, I got to say the fact that, you know, the day after Joe Fest, Ed made the post that they sold 5,027 tickets.
If you look at vendors, guests, everyone that shows up with the vendors and guests, the helpers, the et cetera, the family, I mean, you're almost 6,000 people.
Yeah.
In that 40,000 square foot space, some of us for 5 days long. I think when Todd and I and A pulled out of the parking lot, Mahalik was getting on a shuttle, which left Kavanaugh kind of as the last man standing because he pulled out of the parking lot behind us. He's already announced that next year it's going to be back at Augusta. I know there was some speculation on whether or not he was going to find another town. If it's the same hotel, it's a great space and he's able to fill it. So if you're a vendor, you want to get in touch with him quick because it's going to run out of space for you. I'm hitting Kentuckiana. You were going to hit it, but I think you've kind of dropped out at this point due to everything else going on in your life.
I want to say I'm not 100% out, but more than likely, unfortunately, I might have to skip it due to a lot of stuff going on.
So we're sitting at 85%. We don't count on seeing you, but if you happen to walk on the floor, we're going to party. There are other shows going on. I talked a lot to Drew and Rust about SoCal. I told them I was absolutely not going to make it because it's the same weekend as my sister graduates college. But I was wrong. Those are different weekends.
Oh, boy.
There are other shows throughout the year, and I know of several in my region, but I don't know of all of them. So I would love to hear of more shows. I would love to hear people talk about those shows, entice us to go to those shows. I know A wants to go to more shows. But I would like to close this conversation out with one thing. Because we got a table this year, Rhino got a table as well. His buddy Andrew set up beside us. Andrew and Rhino were amazing to sit and chat with and go to dinner with. And I talked to Rust a lot, but I've never shook hands with him. I couldn't be more appreciative of who he is, not just because he's done artwork for us, but just in the friendship that we've built over the last couple years. And I've already started hitting Andrew up, and he and I have been chatting since he got home. I already know most of the people that I hung out with this weekend. There are very few new people I met. Meeting John from Grindstone and his son, those were new people to me. Andrew was a new person to me. And Rust, you know, one of my close friends, and now I've actually got to shake his hand. So thank you guys. And thanks for Ed for allowing us to be a small portion of his show. Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us. This is the problem of trying to do this live, is now everybody gets to see how we just stare at each other, confused, until we can figure out what we're supposed to say.
All right, it's opening night, preview night at Joe Fest 2021. The floor is popping. It's been popping since about 9 a.m. I've already spent too much money. I haven't even got started. I spent too much money last night before the doors for the convention floor even opened.
This has been the Order of Battle.
This is my first Joe Fest, and I'm very excited.